Well, hello and welcome to the unofficial Unreal Engine podcast, where we talk about all things Unreal Engine and also mind reading community service projects. I'm your host, I'm Alex, and here with me today is a very special guest. I've got George Georgic. Apologies for the mispronunciation, but it's going to be great anyway. I'm sure we'll stumble through a few instances of language barriers today, as I myself encountered while enjoying beautiful Belgrade in Serbia. But good to have you, George. How are you?
Yeah, doing good. Thank you for the introduction. Yeah, the pronunciation is good. Like, I guess you got some like practice in Belgrade. So
yes, of course. One of my highlights in Belgrade before Unreal Day even started was going to visit a friend of mine who was in a play, and the entire play was in Serbian. So I actually got to enjoy just listening to the Serbian language for 2 hours and doing my best to interpret what was going on while sneakily also trying to look at Google Translate on my phone and like try to catch a few words and sentences here and there.
Yeah, I can imagine it. It's not like an easy language to learn, but like if you spend a lot of time with Serbians, you're gonna catch up a word or two.
Amazing. All right. Well, our guests, as is common for the show, might not know who you are yet, and we're gonna start by teasing them a little bit with a bit of word association, and then we'll dive in proper. That sound okay? And also, I guess I should tell our audience, too, what we'll be covering today, in addition to our lovely chat, will be specifically two events that the two of us were at, Unreal Day over in Serbia, as well as AWE Vienna, which is short for Augmented World Expo, and it's a big gathering of cool XR people like George and myself and many, many others. So that's what we're covering today. And to start out with our da-da-da word association game, here's the way it works, George. I'm just going to say a word, and you tell me the first thing that comes to mind. Can be another word, can be a sentence, can be whatever you want. Home.
Home. Okay, so like... Home. A home screen, Unreal Engine home. I don't know right now. Like it's a okay.
No wrong answer. Something.
Yeah, the wrong answer. There's no wrong answers. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Home. So how about work?
Work. So like, let's say Belgrade. Home would be like home would be Shabbats, and like Belgrade would be work. I mostly travel to Belgrade, something related to work, and like home. Could also be Novi Sad. I studied and lived in Novi Sad for like 6 years. So in any case, I know. I guess you know that Trilateral is like originally from Novi Sad. So
yeah.
So home is like Novi Sad and Shabbats, and work is definitely Belgrade.
Cool. Excellent. How about food?
Food. So food would be Shabbats. But Belgrade as well, like good restaurants both in Belgrade and Shabbat. Maybe some people from Novi Sad were going to hate me, but I kind of was like, I know of better restaurants in Belgrade and Shabbat than in Novi Sad particularly. But in Serbia, like if you have a chance to come back again, like in a soon time, yeah? You should visit the south of Serbia, like Niš and that region. They are really, especially the food down there is good.
Excellent. Love it. How about travel?
Travel. So like, let's say Vienna. I've been traveling to Vienna for like, we have a client in Vienna, and like we went recently, as you mentioned, to AWE. And like recently I've been a lot traveling to Vienna and back like from Belgrade, but it's good by car and by airplane. It's close by.
Love it. How about Fortnite?
Fortnite, like a game that I missed playing because like I was already too old to spend my days and nights in like enjoying Fortnite. But I'm a Counter-Strike fan, and I spent a lot of thousands of hours playing that game in my like university years.
Oh, yeah. Amazing. How about virtual production?
Virtual production, yeah. Like, let's say that currently for virtual production, I've been talking with, I don't know if you met him, Georgi. He's a XR producer from Russia. He was on Unreal Day, and like we are currently like trying to create something like a festival and to create some of do-it-yourself kind of a true production rig for our own, but we played around with rig production back in 2018 or 19, something like that, with like a Logitech cam and like HTC Vive trackers and stuff like that. We did it like before the virtual production was like kind of, let's say, out of the box solution from Unreal. It was more like, it was before HTC Mars or something like that. It's more like do it yourself and play around. We also used like, before that we used for, you know, like Kinect, Xbox Kinetic devices. So played around for it like for like couple of years.
Love it. Unreal Engine.
Unreal Engine, like the first game that I played in my life was Unreal Tournament.
Oh.
Back in 2002 or something like that, 2003. Don't quote me on this, but like something like that. And it was like the age of, I'm like 30 years old. So it was the age of Quake, Half-Life, Counter-Strike, like the first versions. But the first game that I played was Unreal Tournament. And like back in 2013 or 14, in when I was at my university, the first game engine I was introduced to was Unreal Engine, like 4.3 or something like that back then. It was like the projects that we had on Faculty of Technical Sciences in Novi Sad, and we kind of had a cool project with Unreal where we had like we played around with Nintendo Wii. And like played with Xbox Kinect, you can create a game in Unreal, and like you can control it with like, I created like a racing game, and it was like if you hold your hand up like this, it's like going forward. It's if you put it down, it's going like in reverse. And I kind of were moving my left hand in a way that to control like steering and stuff. But in any case, Unreal was love at first sight. And like, let's say 2018, we kind of started like experimenting with Autodesk 3D Max and Maya and putting it inside Unreal. Back in the university, I was obsessed with GPU rendering. I don't know if you like, if you use Redshift.
Like, no, I have not.
It's a GPU renderer. So if you are coming from the 3D art world, the CPU rendering was super slow and like problematic. And like I kind of found out from my professor at the university that there's an alpha test for a Redshift GPU render, which was like rendering in seconds. And I kind of applied and got it. So that was like me trying to optimize rendering since like 20 years old or something like that. And when Unreal came by, it was a perfect mix to something that you are creating in 3D to like display it in a cool way, and it just keeps getting better as you know.
Yeah. Fun fact for anyone who is curious, Unreal Tournament came out November 22nd, 1999. So totally possible that your dates for when you started playing it were accurate.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it was in a local like the internet shop, something like eShop, eCoffee.
Yeah. Man, I remember those like internet cafes, like the early days of like, hey, a place you can go use a computer. It's so crazy.
Yeah, exactly. But, and I got my first PC like maybe a year later in 2003. I remember that date, like it's January 7th, 2003. I remember that part. And like,
why do you remember that specific date?
It's like, it's something around, sorry, January 27th.
Okay, I guess.
It's Saint Sava Day in Serbia. And the guy is like known in Serbia as someone, a saint who like is for education, and he's the like a monarch, Serbian monarch in the past who were like trying to educate the people and the Serbs. So like kind of I got a PC, and it was like the start of my career and education in a way.
That's so cool. Love it. All right. Now we move on to some short form questions. How do you take, well, we used to say this is, how do you take your coffee? Enough people don't actually drink coffee now that this question is now, if you drink something in the morning, coffee, tea, dear, whatever. How do you take it?
I was really late in starting to drink coffee, but now like I drink it with everything that you can put it in. So milk and sugar. So I plan to like give it up. I had like 3 months of like a marathon without coffee, and it was good. But I kind of accidentally went back into the abyss of drinking 3 to 4 espressos during the day.
I don't think I've ever told my relationship with coffee on the show, but now is maybe as good a time as any. I was a little bit afraid of coffee for a long time. My father would work 80, 90 hour weeks when I was a kid as the entertainment director for a resort. And I saw how much he like needed coffee in order to stay alive. And I think what I was seeing, the same way people feel about, you know, parents who have trouble with alcoholism and that kind of thing, was I was seeing like a substance dependency and like how much he relied on that. And if he didn't get his coffee, like he was just totally non-functional. So I avoided coffee for a while. And then those who have been following the show for a while know I'm a pretty enthusiastic, sometimes hyperactive guy. And when I first did an architecture program at Cornell over the summer of 2004, I had several professors who told me that I needed to stop drinking coffee because I was like too hyper and too energetic and talking too fast. And I was like, I haven't had any coffee. This is just who I am. That being said, starting just yesterday, couldn't tell you why. Maybe this is a post-election, my brain trying to rewire itself or something. But I dropped my kids off for like a little Taekwondo thing that they were doing for Veterans Day. And I went to a nearby cafe to be nearby them. And I just ordered a coffee, like as though it was a normal thing, even though I've literally never just casually ordered a coffee before. And I had it and it was tasty. And maybe I'm beginning a new relationship here. But yeah, it's a new thing for me. When did you first start drinking coffee?
Like it was, I think, third year of university. Basically, before that, I was like, I was drinking a lot of juices, but like the coffee I started drinking, I had a university job, like a video producer for a event management company based in Novi Sad. So when I was there with them on concerts and festivals, everyone who were sitting at the table were ordering like a espresso, like a cappuccino. So basically, I just started ordering the same with them, and it was more like a sweet thing, like a dessert, not a coffee.
Right.
Like one thing led to another, and now I'm like on short espresso, like with a bit of cold milk and sugar.
Cool.
Funny thing with my coffee, like in 80% of the time when I'm in some new coffee shop, they bring me an espresso with hot milk instead of cold. And I especially say with cold milk, and they bring me like with the hot. So, but I'm not that guy to like send it back. I just bring the hot one as well. So
yeah.
I accept things as they are. Yeah.
Nice. I love it. All right. Next question. What is a piece of media, book, movie, video game, immersive art installation that really rocked your world that you would recommend other people check out if they haven't experienced it already?
Okay. So the movie. Okay. I'm like a TV show guy. I don't know if you watched Silicon Valley from HBO. Mm-hmm. It's a perfect show to watch in 2024 because they kind of predicted the future.
It's not satire anymore. It's just reality. It may as well be a documentary, right?
Yeah, exactly. But like we had a project which we did with a client from like Switzerland, and our programmer, the developer, went to IBM. Like it was an IBM project, like something in January 2023, and like he literally experienced the same situation from that TV show. Like someone accidentally was deleting his code by like putting something on a keyboard.
You know? Wow.
And like it was almost a catastrophe, but like he kind of managed to notice it and like to stop the people doing that. Like
Russ Hanneman. I feel like I've met Russ Hanneman, but not the billionaire version, a much poorer version who is still kind of obsessed with that kind of status.
Okay. In any case, when they were like explaining the situation and what was happening, I was kind of did you guys watch the TV show like Silicon Valley? And I'm like now telling people you should watch it if you did. That's definitely. And something that like I tried VR for the first time in 2018.
Wow.
And back then it was like the end of the hype, like in Serbia, like in the world. But I know a lot of people who were in starting to get into VR just then, and they're successful now. Like they have their own VR games and experiences. In any case, it was like forestry, Ministry of Forests in Serbia. There was their like exhibition. And you would like, maybe you know this experience, but you could have heads around it. It was the HTC Vive back then. And you start like, you see everything is black, but you look like up and you see that like there's light coming. And you realize that you're a small tree that is growing. And you can like move your hands. And you see the like you're growing in like into a large sequoia or something like that, a huge tree. And at the one point, you notice that the animals are starting to run away beneath your feet. And like you see the fire like in the distance. And at that point, like for me, first trying the HTC Vive, and I was like, I can smell smoke. And I'm like that. No, man, you're just like hallucinating. No way. But it, in the end, like you were like when you see the fire and the forest fire and everything, you like have a like a statistics displaying that so many acres of forest gets destroyed by forest fires and like be responsible in a way. And I was like, okay. And I was quiet about the smell. And after that, I noticed that the guy who's displaying them, he lights a lighter or something like that. And the smoke, basically, he just slowly moves beneath your nose.
Oh.
So basically, he's like playing that with hyper reality. After that, soon, like in Belgrade, there was a hyper reality hackathon. So you can create a VR application, but you need to like combine it with something realistic. So there was a horror VR experience, and the guys were creating a full ball of worms, but you put your hands in spaghetti, and people like were horrified. So that hyper reality, so not virtual reality but hyper reality, was combining like the plank, if you know the experience,
real plank experience. Yeah, down a building.
Yeah, but if you put someone on a like a half a meter like plank that they can't touch the floor, it's like the whole experience changes for the users.
Yeah. Yeah, we often refer to that as immersion multipliers as well. Anything that makes you feel that much more involved. The funny thing with the smoke, I thought you were going to say that, you know, there was no smoke and it was your brain kind of filling in the gaps, because we do have such hackable brains, as I think VR and other technologies have proven. I think a recent example of this would also be the Apple Vision Pro, where with the dinosaur encounter experience, like there's a part where a butterfly lands on your finger. And so many people say they really feel like they're experiencing the sensation of the butterfly landing, because it's such a light touch anyway. More in line with the spaghetti and the smoke that you just described. When I used to give people the early Oculus demo that would cycle through a bunch of scenes quickly, one of them was kind of a Jurassic Park one with a dinosaur that roars at you. And I would always have a little spray bottle ready. As he roars at you and his, you know, spits coming out and everything, I do like a little bit of spray on people's faces and it would freak them out.
that was good, but like dangerous. You could like damage the device, the headset.
Yeah, I play pretty fast and loose with that stuff. I've done a lot of VR outdoors as well and like been caught in the rain. I've never, knock on wood, had any headset like actually malfunction or fail totally, but you know, but let's not have that happen. I definitely should be a little more protective of this stuff that I
like. Okay. Don't do this at home.
Yes. I know. Yeah. All right, two more questions, then we're going to dive more into your larger story here. One, favorite time of day.
Favorite time of day, afternoon.
Cool. What was the last time you remember laughing? Could be, you know, something silly you saw happen. Could be a joke someone told you. Anything that comes to mind of a time you laughed.
Yeah, we laughed a lot during this, like, call and the preparation. Yeah. But in any case, I have a kid, a 3-year-old kid, so I'm laughing all the day.
Oh my God.
All the time, all day. So, yeah, he's like, now we accidentally showed him, like, there's a TV show, Vikings. So now he's like in that really dangerous kind of way that he likes to, like, punch people. And people, like, are like, oh, look at you. But he can throw a punch in any case. So we're kind of trying to put some boundaries on that. But it's a mixture of, it's funny, but not that funny.
Yeah.
Stop laughing. Like,
I hear you. I have found that I have been showing my kids who are 7 and 9 years old now a lot of content that is definitely not age appropriate. But what I do to maybe make myself feel better about it is I make sure it's content that I'm already familiar with. So I do find very particularly like which moments to cover their eyes or to skip over or to just talk over if they're just saying something really inappropriate. Like I'll start a conversation with very loud, like right as something really inappropriate is being said. So, you know, debatable if this is actually good parenting or not, but it does allow me to, I think, introduce at least some very interesting ideas and concepts. And like in your case with Vikings, history in a way that otherwise, you know, our younger kids might not have access to.
Yeah, definitely. It's like my wife and me were watching that and we kind of like catched a few moments and it's like really difficult to explain, but I try my best like explaining what they're doing and why it's bad and why you shouldn't do that, like explaining like that. But it's, as you say, I'm not sure what's like, I try my best at good parenting, but I'm not precisely 100% sure what good parenting is.
Yeah, we're all doing this for the first time. You know, there's not exactly a agreed upon playbook of exactly the right way to do it. My general philosophy is like, show your kids what you're excited about, find out what makes them excited, try to foster that curiosity and love of discovering new things and learning. And there's a very good chance they'll land in a good place. The kids I grew up with who are probably the most unhappy were the ones whose parents had a very clear idea of what they wanted to turn their kids into. And if that wasn't what their kids were naturally inclined toward, you know, it became torture to a certain degree. So that's really the only thing I'm cognizant of. As long as we're talking about parenting and all that, yeah, what kind of comes to mind as you think about any of your guiding philosophy as you figure this out the first time?
Yep, exactly. It's not an easy job, but like regarding like that what you mentioned, like age appropriate, like when I was a kid, you had like it was a difficult time in Serbia, and you don't have like a specific time when some movie or something like on TV is displayed to the audiences. So I watched horror movies when I was a kid, and like I didn't like, I'm not into it right now. I wasn't a bad person or a bad kid because of that. And like it was maybe in the elementary school I was trying to like scare other kids, but like that's Halloween or something like that. In any case, I thought through time, it's not so much what the kids are watching. It's more that they understand it in a correct way. Is it?
I don't know who's into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Have you had any issues with, actually, I'll ask this both for when you were a kid as well as your 3-year-old now, but any problems with nightmares with do any of those images come back to haunt you or your 3-year-old?
Okay, so from my side, maybe I had like a few that I remember, a few nightmares, but I kind of, let's say, I started playing Diablo, and you have like the badass Tyrael Archangel, and he was like my hero, and if you see a monster in your dream, you just like call Tyrael, and he's gonna like throw them away or something like that. So in any case, I kind of didn't have much diapers. And for my son, personally, he doesn't. Like, he's good. He's fearless, in a way.
That's great. Good for
him. He's a Viking.
He's a Viking, yeah. What's he got to be afraid of? That's awesome. All right. Well, let's dive a little bit more. I feel like we've actually covered a fair amount of your life journey so far already, but I want to kind of go through, you know, early inspiration and all that. Before we do that, I always forget to say, please, if you're not already, follow the podcast, like, rate, subscribe. We're on all the different platforms now, growing that audience. And we're going to start doing a little bit more Q&A on the podcast. So if you have a question you'd like to ask me, I'll bring it up with guests. I'll answer it myself. Email unoffunrealpod@gmail.com. And we hope to hear from you. Excellent. Okay, so again, very happy to have Georgia Georgic here on the podcast, who has a wonderful name. And we're going to talk a little bit about your history, how you came to be the founder and CEO of Pixels to Pixels. And then, of course, how we both ended up meeting each other at Unreal Day. And we'll cover all that fun stuff. So where would you like to begin?
Well, I don't want to go too far, but in any case, I'm an IT guy from like an IT kid, then like an IT teenager. And after that, like in the university, I kind of found my, the role. I played video games since like 5 years old, 6 years old, something like that. Maybe before that, but I don't remember. Yeah. Right. In any case, I'm a PC master race kind of guy. So no consoles, but probably PC gaming.
Yeah.
In any case, the first touch for me for computer graphics per se was in high school. I'm a Photoshop guy, a video editor, like doing stuff for people in my recent area, like in the neighborhood, which they need like video editing, Photoshopping services, something like that. But when I went to the university, I was studying computer graphics, like engineering animation. Animation engineering, something like that. In any case, that's the first time when I was like for sure, 100% sure that I want to go into like computer graphics. I was more into VFX, like for movies and stuff like that. But it kind of went all directions during university, and like after that, I kind of was planning. A lot of my friends were in Trilateral and Apex back at the time, you know, there were two major companies in 2016. And like, I kind of returned from Novi Sad to Belgrade in 2017 to finish my, like, how do you say it? Like the final project for the university, the
thesis or dissertation or
thesis, something like that. I did some like augmented reality for iOS devices.
Ah, cool.
Back then. I plan to return to Novi Sad and get a job at Trilateral as a scan matcher and then go in that direction, because like there wasn't so much options back then, and I was like more into Trilateral and like Maya and Unreal, and not so much into Unity and Hopa games, like hidden adventure puzzle games. I don't know if you know which genre is that. In any case, I kind of, when I returned to Shabbats, I was reintroduced to a colleague of mine, Sasha Tershits. He's a veteran. He's like basically, he finished Chiron School of Animation in 2002 or something like that. Most of the people in Serbia who finished that school are now like in Hollywood or like Sony, like in the movie industry or high top in the gaming industry. Peja Bakic was the founder of that studio in Belgrade, was a personal professor of Sasha. So I kind of was, okay, Sasha, I can learn a lot from you. Do you need any help on your projects? And he kind of gave me a project, like it was in Marvel's Designer, like the plot simulation. Which then transferred to Maya, and it was supposed to be rendered there in like in any renderer. Then I like kind of like explained to them that Redshift is existing and it's gonna save the cost and everything. So it was the first like addition. So I was trying to do that for like, I was doing that for 2 weeks, and like I kind of solved them a problem where I didn't sleep for 2 days, but I solved their pipeline project in a way. So they kind of tripled my salary.
Wow.
And like I was okay, this is not so bad, like from the money side, their financial side. But in any case, for the 2 weeks and more, I was learning so much by being in direct contact with the team, like very senior team. And after that, during that project, we come by for another project from like a old client from Vladan, mm-hmm. From Sasha, who was he's like a US citizen like in San Francisco, is a, like a designer agency and stuff like that. We were supposed to create a video in 2 weeks. And I somehow like managed to cover that part. And together with Sasha, we finished that like on time. The client was like super, super happy with the result. And we kind of started working from one project to another. And I kind of didn't return to Novi Sad. And Sasha and me were like getting new clients, getting new projects, working together. I was learning much more than like, I would say, some of my colleagues working in a corporation or some big studio. And like, I had much more time to experiment. Because like, okay, you get a project, you finish the project for 1 month, you get some like good finance from that, good, let's say it like that, and like you have time to explore, to see what's new, to like play around, to have a study, to create something new. And during that period, I kind of started playing around with VR in Unreal. I don't know if you remember, there was like a Unreal Engine experience in VR for the Oculus Rift, the slow motion, like bullets flying.
Yeah, Showdown.
Mm-hmm. Showdown, yeah. So I was trying that and I was like, okay, so whatever you do in 3D and you display it in VR, it looks 10 times better than it is. Like, it's not, if you like see what kind of 3D models and what kind of computer graphics you have seen in movies or cinematics, and you see in VR, it's like, it's not so good in VR, but it looks better because of the immersion and the 3D, let's say, experience. So in any case, I was trying like to play around with that. And I created, back then we were in Shabbat. There was a cool, I don't know if you heard about them. They're called Started Centers. They're like hubs all around Serbia. And they're like promoting IT networking and stuff like that. And that there was one opening in Shabbats, and we were the first co-workers there, me and Sasha. Later on, I like added more people like web developers, 2D designers, and we were like expanding team quite well. And I kind of had a vision to create a tutorial to explain like to university kids in Shabbat how you can create like your own application or something like that. And like during that tutorial or like a course, I met Stefan. Stefan was I would say a wonder kid who basically created his own game in high school and like managed to publish it on Steam and to earn a couple of thousand dollars. And he was like really into Unreal, and we were like, they want to work with us and stuff like that. And during that time, we managed to somehow display that and make the guys from the city of Shabbat noticed us and what we were doing, and they wanted for us to create some kind of virtual reality experience for the National Museum or something in Shabbat. So we were like, there was a battle in World War One or something like that, which we wanted to display. Yeah, that's the Showdown cinematic here. Yeah. In any case, we wanted to make something like this, but in World War One, where you can like experience some famous battles that Serbian army won in the First World War. And they were like more in a way, let's don't do that. Let's try to do like, we have a fortress, which is like from the 15th century. Let's try to recreate that. And we were like put in contact with the experts in the museum. And we were starting to like, to get an idea what we can display for them. And at that moment, we kind of were worried because this is 2018, beginning of 2019. We were kind of worried because at that moment, I couldn't find anything in VR that is not basically cartoonish or that's lasting for like an open space. There was Hartmann Shadow. He had a World Chronicle, which is famous in the world. World Chronicle Shabbat. I'm just gonna show you the image that we kind of, yeah, this is the I don't know if you can see this.
Yeah, I'll hold on, let me swap over the screen share.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
Yeah. And here we are.
Okay, so in any case, this was the drawing of Shabbat's fortress from like 1493, as you can see this.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like starting from this. We kind of started creating 3D models and like trying to get it to put that all in Unreal and to display to people. But like we were thinking all along I'm gonna see the video link that I sent you. Yeah, here it is. So we kind of started by taking a drone and using reality capture to recreate the like what's left of that fortress now in 2019. And we kind of made a 3D menu of it. And we like divided the city in different, like we divided the city in different parts. And had a, like, if you will look at a watch, you can like teleport into a different part of the city. We had like a east gate, a tavern, or stuff like that. Some of the models we kind of bought on the marketplace.
We
first checked with the experts from the National Museum, are they like fitting to that period of time and in history and whatnot. And kind of what we didn't manage to find on the marketplace, we kind of created on our own. And there was like a level design. Sasha, Stefan, and me were like the main people on this. We then later added texts. We like displayed it in Serbian, Latin, Cyrillic, in English. We put like everything. We kind of see how we created a game that they can play in the National Museum, but in a way it can be like educational. You have like, if you are close to some building, you can see something like a text that you can read. Back then in VR, it's not so good to read in VR. Yeah, so we added like audio files that were played and that you can follow along. And we added a lot of things that were like pickable. You can pick it from a table and or throw it or something like that. And we added like knights characters. This was like a funny thing right now, because like just gonna mute all notifications, sorry. In any case, yeah, you have like swords and stuff. The characters were a funny thing, because in the contract that we signed with the National Museum, we planned like around 20 characters. And when we created the city and put 20 characters there, it was empty, like, because it was the huge amount of space and it, right. 20 characters were like just not there. Mm-hmm. So like basically we kind of pivoted and made like 140 characters with different animations moving forward, like talking and stuff like that. Yeah, that guy is missing a texture of his face, but like this was the old demo video.
By the way, which version of Unreal this was?
This was 4.19.
19, yeah.
Yeah, 4.19. We kind of were experimenting with two or three versions back then, which was behaving the most. We like the funny thing with this, like we had a 1080 and 1070 NVIDIA graphic card, and we bought for this like a 2080 Ti card. And because of weird reason with drivers or something like that, we got better performance on the non-RTX versions.
I heard a lot of this. Yeah. Yeah. Not surprising.
Yeah. So in any case, it was like, everything that could go wrong, like Murphy's Law, was going wrong. But we were like on time in delivery. And when we finished this, we, together with the museum, we organized like an opening days. And during the 3 days, we were having 5 HTC Vibes headsets. And it was around 1,500 people which visited the museum during those 3 days. Like almost 500 each day, which was at for this museum, like a big number, because they are more oriented than like like let's say traditional exhibitions in the museum. And they had like in the past they were playing with holograms, but this was something unique and back then really innovative for a fact. But during the work which we had for the fortress, we kind of got new inquiries. There was a city in Serbia who has like a Roman remains of an ancient city, which wanted to recreate a similar thing like this, but like maybe with multiplayer and stuff like that, like a location-based environment, whatever. And like to recreate it in a like a Roman ancient city and stuff like that. So we were like in 2019 very optimistic for this business model. So like to connect, to create VR experiences for museums and other like cultural institutions. And kind of we got a meeting in like a booked meeting with the city for that Roman project in 2020 in March, but kind of the COVID started, and that kind of messed things up like for this business model especially.
Yeah.
In any case, like when things settled in 2022, we kind of reconnected with them, so it's like still in the pipeline. It's something that probably will happen at one point. In any case, yeah, we got the Quest 1 in May of 2019, and that's the next VR wow effect for me, because it was freedom. It was like the Quest 1 is really, let's say, I had a it was a higher jump from HTC Vive to the Quest 1 than like from Quest 1 to Quest 2 then Quest 3. Like this was more smaller steps, but the Quest 1 was revolutionary in a way. So since then, we kind of moved towards the let's say foreign clients, Switzerland, Austria, Germany. In any case, and we were like creating applications for the Quest 2 and Quest 1 per se. We now like mostly work with like Austria and Swiss companies for providing services, and we have like a few clients from the US in a way. In any case, we are as a team, Stefan, Sasha and me are still working like since 2019 together. As a team, we are more like now trying to create more of our products. This fortress wasn't on Steam or something like that. It was just for the National Museum. So our plan now is to basically update the version of Unreal, move it all into 5.4 or 5.3, add maybe Lumen or Nanite, make it like much more realistic and optimized, and like publish it on Steam or maybe Epic Games or something like that. So people can like, who have a like a PC VR or something like that, they can use it. We updated it for the Quest 2, so you can use it as a PC VR in a way. Since then, we did like a lot of stuff in Unreal. I don't know if you heard about Godot game engine.
Of course. Yeah, we actually made a parody of it for a Vision Pro hackathon pretty recently. Godot, for those who know theater, there's a play called Waiting for Godot by Samuel Beckett. And we made our Apple Vision Pro experience called Waiting for Unreal. And it was kind of riffing on the idea that a lot of people are waiting for Unreal Engine to get better compatibility with with Apple Vision Pro. Anyways, continue. Godot, you were saying.
In any case, yeah, the there is always, when I'm explaining to you, some people say Godot, but someone says Godot. So Godot is the real pronunciation. We have a project like since 2021, which is together with Ariel, who is the co-founder of Godot. And it was like back then, it was a Web3 project. Let's say 2022, a metaverse project. So we created in Godot like a WebGL version of the like of the gamification of that project. And as well, we created a Quest 2 version, all developed in Godot. So right now we have more projects in Unreal and Godot, and the least of them is Unity. So in any case, yeah, the Godot was a project that we started working on. I met a fabulous developer, Ivan, who kind of applied for a 3D artist role in our company and didn't send his portfolio. I always love to tell this story because I was like, if you are a 3D artist and you said like you apply for a job of a 3D artist and you don't set a showreel or portfolio, I won't consider your application. Like I can't see anything. And he applied twice without the portfolio for mistake. And I was like just sorting the applications, like, and I saw that at the same time we had a Godot developer Java application, and we have a 3D artist Java application. And he didn't saw the Godot application. He didn't like apply, but in his CV, which he like attached, if you know on the corner when you say like skills and you say like Maya 3 stars, like something like that, he said Godot game engine 5 stars. And I'm like, okay, I'm gonna interview this guy. And like since then until now, he was like he's a lifesaver. I can say for a fact that he, like, for some project, he saved jobs for a lot of people in a way. And they love him because of that. Like, no one would do that. So in any case, yeah, we do a lot of projects with Go, and we do a lot of projects with Unreal. We have very few projects with Unity. And I'm gonna roll back a bit. My university thesis was in Unity.
So I know
stuff in Unity and Unreal, personally used both, but like didn't use Godot like personally on some project, but I understand the semantics and everything.
So if somebody were to ask you what's Godot best at, what's Unity best at, what's Unreal best at, say they're getting started and trying to select, what would your response to that be?
Yeah, so like if you are a 3D artist and you're really on the visual, like choose Unreal. This is like the most easiest way to create something visually appealing. And like if you want to play with VR and like some let's say mechanics, how you pick some things up and like doing like maybe a forklift instructions or something like that, I think it's better in Unity. It's easier in Unity, but again, I always have to leave a disclaimer. It's not about the engine; it's about the engineer. Mm-hmm. So, if you have like a really good Unity technical artist or a developer, he is gonna create better things, even visually, like building in Unity than someone in Unreal. So, like. It's a matter of a personal choice, but I think both Unreal, both Unity are good per se. Me personally, I love Unreal, and like I would always use that, like what I did in the past. And for Godot is cool because it's open sourced. Right. You don't need to like tackle some things that you're tackling with Unity. And like the idea is that we had problems with Unreal in the past. We had problems with Unity, and we didn't have those problems with Godot. And like, if you like Blender, you're gonna love Godot. So like, Blender is someone of an underdog, which in the last couple of years, like, is a really serious software.
Yeah. Let's take a moment also to just appreciate how much things have changed from the days of Unreal Tournament. You know, when you and I were much younger. For someone who wanted to get started then, the tools were obviously much less powerful, but also they were just mostly inaccessible. Like you could mod, you know, things like Unreal Tournament and Half-Life and stuff like that. But nowadays you have Blender, you have Godot, you have Unreal Engine and Unity, which also are free to a certain degree if you're not making too much money. Unreal has a certain amount of source code access as well. And then, yeah, you have even these like Adobe alternatives now. I'm thinking about this because I am actively trying to move away from only using these Adobe tools as their pricing is a little bit ridiculous to me. So like I just started using, DaVinci Resolve, which also just announced support for spatial videos recently. And then there's, you know, things like Gimbal or whatever for Photoshop. I just started doing one that's kind of an Illustrator alternative. Anyway, so many of these free open source tools that anyone with a computer and an internet connection can get started with. How jealous are you of a young, bright, up-and-coming person who's trying to get started in the industry now compared to when we were younger?
Yeah, definitely. It's like I told a lot of like younger kids, like, if I was in your position and I had all this like companies around me and all this free software that I can use and all this like content, learning content, I would be like three times better than I am right now, like for the last 8 years or something like that. I can like imagine this, like the Sasha, he's 60 this year. He turned 60 this year. He's 20. Like his story is really interesting. He was a police inspector until he's 40, and then he switched to VFX. So it's never too late to like to shift. But in any case, like he says always, yeah, man, I would download a PDF file for the whole day just to learn something. Yeah. And it was the time of the wooden internet, as he says. Like,
professional.
So now I think it's a blessing and a curse, because I think there is too much content right now.
Oh yeah.
You now have a problem to like, they should like have something as a IMDb, like the internet movie database, yeah, for like learning content. Like you can put 5 stars or something like that. So you can avoid watching something that is not like really quality work. As movies, you can like, IMDb is something that I'm like, if I see a movie that's below some grade, I just don't watch it. Like it's probably a waste of time or something like that. But right now you have like so much content on YouTube and on LinkedIn and like a lot of like Coursera, a lot of tutorials. But right now, you as an instructor for Unreal is, I told this calling a day or two. I probably watched you at some point, like listen to your voice and like, but I'm not like, you don't notice who is giving the lecture.
Mm-hmm.
When you're watching a tutorial, it's different when like the master class that you did and on Unreal Day, it was something like great and we like kind of connected with you personally. But if it was just like online streaming and you were like just most of the tutorials don't have even a video or like a webcam of the instructor. We can just hear your voice in a way. But in any case, if they are in a better position, they just need to learn how to differentiate a good content from bad. Or at least not bad, but not good enough, let's say it like that.
Yeah, I think that's really important, especially with all the AI tools that are becoming available. Like you can generate content with a lowercase c as much as you want, but if you don't have the taste or the curatorial sense to distinguish, this is a really exciting direction, let's keep like figuring out how to modify this or do more iterations on this, versus, you know, if Midjourney, let's say as an example, if Midjourney gives you 9 variations on a prompt, you say, and you're like, oh, they're all good. Like, you probably need to develop your sense of taste a little bit more before you'll actually be a creative person of value, I guess I'd say.
Exactly my point. Yeah, with AI is kind of, AI right now is the only technology for the last couple of years that makes me feel not so bright. Like, mm-hmm. I need to like spend some time to be updated. What's changed? And like at the moment when I see like, okay, I now got it, they release something new that changes the rule of the game, and I kind of, okay, I'm stupid again. Like I need to go back and to learn new things. In any case, it's really rapidly evolving, and it's gonna, I know a lot of people in our industry that are like kind of afraid for their jobs. Like a friend of mine who was a cinematic expert in Unreal and like real-time videographer, let's say it like that, real-time rendering, yeah. He's like now just prompting. And he says, man, that's like for advertisement and the people are just prompting. It's I'm not opening Unreal anymore. Or I open it, create something, and from this like basic thing that I created in Unreal, I put it like in Roadway or whatever other AI tool I have and create something that they're going to use it as the end product.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's a weird weird time to be alive. Speaking of which, we haven't really done this on the podcast before. I know we said we were mostly going to talk about Unreal Day and AWE today, which I want to do with the 20 minutes or so we have left until I get to hop over to another meeting. But just now, in case you didn't know, Unreal Engine 5.5 just came out. Just came out of preview. Now it's available to the public. George, would you like to very briefly look at the release notes with me and just see if there's anything that jumps out at us that we want to flag for people as an exciting new thing? How's that sound?
Yeah, sounds exciting.
Okay, great. Let's do it. I've got it pulled up. Unreal Engine 5.5 now available. Let's share my screen. Have you been playing at all with the preview, or you've been in stabler waters lately?
We've been in stabler waters. Maybe Stefan was playing around with it, but like for the last couple of days or weeks, I didn't have much chance to play around with it.
All right, Unreal Engine 5.5 out. Okay, let's just see. We're just going to go through it quickly and see what catches our eyes. Unreal Engine 5.5 now available. Hooray, November 12th. November 5.5 is here. There's a feature highlight video. We'll maybe just play some of this. I also, by the way, when I'm watching even tutorials, I'll usually do this kind of thing where I'll just kind of skip through it and see what catches my attention. So we get stuff with like control rig. We got megalites. We got some virtual production stuff. Ooh, VR. Look at that. Okay. Oh, and this is the VR scouting mode, by the way. Have you played at all with the rejiggered VR scouting tools?
No. No, we didn't.
It's a little bit unfortunate that a lot of people don't realize is it seems like this is made for virtual production, and it is for virtual production out of the box. They even put it there. But this system, and Brian Frager gave a great talk in this at Unreal Engine or at Unreal Fest, you can actually customize your VR mode to be whatever is going to be useful to you. Not unlike some of the things you can do with a remote control API and all that. So you can actually set up a VR editing mode that's just really valuable for whatever your particular workflow is. Mobile game development, that's going to be important. Unreal Zen server. And there's more megalite stuff. Okay, so I'll scroll through it really quick, and then let's just go back to anything that caught your eye. So we got animation updates. We got control rig updates. Metahuman stuff. So we both got to see at Unreal Day really awesome use case of the new audio to face stuff for metahumans. For rendering, we're talking about Lumen running at 60 FPS. So that sounds like there's been some optimizations, especially for hardware ray tracing. Path tracing is getting better as well. DXR accelerated. Substrate goes from experimental to beta. Movie render graph, really cool way to lay out exactly how you pump out renders using the movie render queue. More robust kind of graph-based method compared to using the dialogue box that was available for. Megalites, of course. Victor Broden gave an awesome demo of this on stage at Unreal Fest in Seattle.
Yeah, sort of.
UIC VFX stuff. Other virtual scouting. There's what we were just looking at. Color grading, DMX mobile game development, more optimizations. I noticed they now refer to specifically mobile forward and mobile deferred renderers, I guess, to make sure people don't think that it's actually the same rendering pipeline as desktop forward and desktop deferred.
Yeah, makes sense. The naming convention makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mobile previewer has gotten better, which is good. It's really nice to actually have a sense of what your thing is going to look like on a device before you package. I use this for VR as well to mixed results. I'll just pretend I'm porting to an Android phone, developer iteration send server, and fab integration. We could probably have a whole episode about fab and the state of that right now, but there we go. Those are the highlights. They also of course say, hey, there's also the release notes, but out of everything that you just saw at a glance, George, what kind of jumps out at you is, anything that's particularly exciting about 5.5?
Yeah, the audio that we saw on Unreal Day is like now available. So in any case, we're gonna play around with it because we have like a project where we are creating a VR experience with like a World War One battle. It's funny to speak because like yesterday was the Remembrance Day, the Armistice Day. So like the First World War, and like Serbia back then was a hero in a way.
Mm.
So we're gonna recreate something like that, and the way that we're gonna animate like people talking and stuff like that, we're gonna use the MetaHuman and the AVA definitely in the future. So we're gonna play around with this in the upcoming days in which.
Excellent.
Most of the things that I saw, like it's something that we saw the Megalites. So everything is familiar.
Like this one I'll call out real quick because for anyone who's dealt with cloud computing and pixel streaming, for those who don't know, Windows is much heavier to run on the cloud. It takes longer to boot up. It you have to deal with Windows Server licensing issues and all that. But that's what you had to do in the past if you wanted things like ray tracing. Now we have Vulkan ray tracing in beta enabled by default, and it brings it up to parity with DX12. So that means you could be running off Linux in the cloud, which again, much, much cheaper, simpler, starts up faster, and pretty much get feature parity with Windows and Unreal Engine. That's exciting to me.
Yeah, definitely. We did like in 2022, we had an issue with a client. We were creating from Unreal. We were exporting for HTML5. And like since 4.23 was the last official version that was supporting HTML5, so WebGL.
Cool.
And we kind of started a project with 4.24, which was like a community-based HTML5. So you had to like download the open source Unreal Engine and try like figuring out all the settings with MScript and stuff like that, different versions. But we kind of found a glitch in the matrix that all the video streaming, so if you put a video shader in your Unreal Engine like scene, mm-hmm. it's gonna display black when you open it in the browser. So like a colleague of ours kind of went into the source code and created a driver. We created a driver, a new plugin, so we like kind of fixed that for 4.24. So currently, I think we're the only one that had it, and we can avoid pixel streaming in a way.
Oh, that's cool! Wow.
So for some, yeah, pixel streaming is better because of the you can display everything that's showed in Unreal, but like if you have 10,000 people attending, it's gonna be really expensive. So this one with the Vulkan makes sense for pixel streaming, but if you want to display it in WebGL for like a lot of people, you still need to use WebGL or maybe WebGPU when it gets like approved from the bosses like the Google, Apple, and Microsoft. I was talking with a few engineers at AWE about that, and we were like all praying for the WebGPU. It's gonna be like a new way to display 3D and stuff in the web, let's say it like that.
Cool. All right. Well, this looks like, I mean, this is a really robust, I'm only like 10% done scrolling through the...
All right. I can no longer see your screen. I just see the us two in the back and the video. So it's starting. I'm going to like explore...
Yeah, grammar. What's grammar? In context of procedural content generation, grammar refers to a formalized system of rules that will now define how content ought to be generated or structured. Cool. Rules dictate how things get strung together, splines, all that. Anyway, I'll scroll through this as fast as I can just to say, like, look at all the amazing things with helpful GIFs and animations. And oh, then we're just at the release notes. My God. So much stuff. And obviously, we're getting a lower frame rate on the screen behind us than what I'm actually seeing. But this might be the most release notes I've ever seen from Epic Games.
Yeah, I take my like sentence back. It's a lot.
Like, yeah, it's crazy. Wow. Upgrade notes. 5.4 files are not compatible and recordings will need to be saved again. Oh, that's for virtual production specifically. I thought that was in general. Really quick, just for fun, I'm going to open up, just create a new Google Doc. I'm just curious how many words are actually in this release, just so we have a record of it, unless it's like so much that my clipboard can't even handle it. Oh, yes, it's thinking hard. Anyways, we don't have a ton of time left. I've been bad about this lately. Same thing happened with Unreal Fest. Let's talk as quick as we can with as much information as we can about our times at Unreal Day, as well as AWE. We'll start with Unreal Day. We already alluded to the fact that there was a really cool demonstration of using the new Mesh to, not Mesh to MetaHuman, audio to MetaHuman face stuff. Let me also pull up an Unreal Day video. Here we go. But yeah, here, while I'm pulling this up, Jordi, why don't you do the honors of explaining to people what Unreal Day is? I'm sure you were much more familiar with it than I was compared to others. So go ahead. What was Unreal Day?
Yeah, for me, Unreal Day was like a gathering of the not only Unreal, but all the CGI, like CG community in Serbia. I saw like a lot of people, a lot of familiar faces. And it was basically the whole day I was meeting and talking with people, which I didn't see in person for some time. And we had like a lot of, topics to discuss, and like a lot, every masterclass that we were seeing and like experiencing was something new to like to talk about. I think Unreal Day should become an Unreal week or an Unreal weekend or something like that. Me personally, from Pixels, us three went and we kind of divided in the morning. So I attended your masterclass and like other colleagues attended other classes. So just that we can like discuss afterwards what the other person missed. So in a way, that was the bad side for me. Like I wanted to be in four different places at once. So in any case, it was really, really nice to see a lot of familiar faces. And I like that the Unreal Engine scene, and that like in the video, you can see that every third game developer uses Unreal Engine. Mm-hmm. And like with Epic Games being present in Serbia and Novi Sad with Relateral, it's going to be like even more people playing around with Unreal Engine and with Unreal Engine for Fortnite. It's like, it's a day that I hope that next year is going to become a week, so we can have like more people like yourself doing masterclasses and like enjoying more than one day. Yeah, we had like a previous day, the Unreal Day started a day before, which I missed, unfortunately, I mentioned that I got a cold. I was sick like the previous few days. So I managed somehow to get the energy to come by and to enjoy the, I was there from like since the morning until the very end of that day. In any case, it's a fabulous thing for the industry, and it should happen quite often, like maybe more than once a year.
Yeah. Agreed. I loved the community. I loved seeing people like you there. The local Serbian Belgrade game development group was amazing. I was fortunate to have a 2-hour masterclass on OpenXR in the morning. I got to be on the Unreal jury for the Unreal Jam and help select the winner, which I thought was a lovely husband-wife game that did not look like it was made in Unreal Engine at all. And then, of course, I got to give a little keynote speech later in the evening where I got to open for Vladimir, who we see here, who, of course, is one of the founders and who runs Freelateral and is, of course, a titan in the industry. And he demonstrated this example of taking the Blue Dot MetaHuman Animator example and then actually having the actor go back through just with audio and re-record his lines in French and Serbian, and then having that entire video playback with those other languages. And it just felt seamless and credible and amazing that Freelateral is there so close over in Novi Sad. And yes, the day before, I was fortunate to get to go visit Novi Sad and get to chat more with the MetaHuman team and everyone at Freelateral. We got to check out their capture space and all that, and got to see a little bit of the roadmap. Like I feel very privileged to know like some things that are coming over the next couple of years with MetaHumans that I can't talk about, but suffice to say, very exciting. Like what an incredibly talented team. Also, another thing I wanted to point about Three Lateral, which you probably know as well, is they're kind of a rare acquisition, because a lot of times when a company gets acquired, it's because of a platform they have. It's something that they've built that's like a set of tools that, you know, another company wants to use or build on. When Three Lateral was acquired, they were really still just a service provider. Like, they were experts in digital humans, but they were doing every kind of project as you know, the specific needs of that project. And then what eventually became like the MetaHuman platform, that all happened post-acquisition. What do you think about that, Georgia, in terms of like, you think about the companies Epic Games has acquired, and it's mostly been things like Sketchfab or Megascans, where it's like there's already a thing there that exists and they want to bring it into their ecosystem. But Three Lateral was kind of different.
I think we kind of started this team in Vienna. And I was like, we had a similar opportunity with Pixels being a service provider. And like when we were in the talks with a Switzerland company, which was interested for us to get acquired. And when I showed what we have, they said, okay, so you don't have any products, just intelligence. And in any case, for Three Lateral, they were doing the best digital human at that in the world at that moment. And I think someone at Epic Games had vision that, hey guys, let's buy this company and like have them create a product, a platform that we can share with everyone, and it's gonna be a huge benefit for the ecosystem, for the Unreal Engine ecosystem. So in any case, yeah, I can understand. So there it can be an exception, but it laterally is a very good exception.
Yeah.
In any case.
It's a good one.
So, I think at that moment, before the acquisition by Epic Games, I think Lateral had so much work for other projects, other video games, that they didn't have enough time to like, okay guys, let's stop everything and let's like try creating a product. But I plan to talk like more in on some event with Vladimir to if he has a chance or time, yeah, to discuss this, because for me he was a titan in the computer graphics industry before the Epic Games.
Oh yeah.
Like came in, that was just like for me the confirmation that he's great, and that the company itself is something worth noticing, and like it's a cool place to work there. A lot of my friends are still working there, and they like have only the best to say about the level.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I'm just going to keep playing some of your videos in the background while we're chatting. But I felt very honored to just share a stage with him and then get to chat with him after. As you say, like he's a brilliant titan of the industry, and we're all better for him and the work he's been bringing to digital humans and everything outside of that as well. Yeah, right. The other thing I was going to mention about Unreal Day from my side was there were some great demos going on in the area, but something that I learned both at Unreal Day and then later at AWE was there's really no reason to pay for a booth. You know, like you can kind of just set up shop at a random table somewhere, and if you've got some headsets and some interesting demos, people will find you. Word of mouth gets around. People will see that you're demoing things for other people, and they'll come by. So at the risk of like getting in trouble for not actually paying to exhibit anything, I was really excited by how much of my time at Unreal Day and at AWE Vienna was actually putting people in headsets. You saw Apple Vision Pro inside the Unreal Day recap video and all that, and quests, and showing them various experiences. That part was really fun.
Yeah, we had our share with exhibitions and showing our SGA, the Super Game Association, is really good at this. They had like a year before, they had like a VR only event. So the companies from Belgrade and Serbia were there, like basically, hanging around, having like getting to know each other better. It's a small VR scene in Serbia, VR especially, but like we all know each other, and we're like, it's not a competition. It's like more a cooperation. The showreel that you're showing is like 3 years old, and we have some showreel in the making. It should be finished quite soon. The reason why it's like 2021, because for the last 3 years, we had so much work that we didn't have like, let's say, time like gather it all and like create some showreel. These are the characters from the fortress from 2019, and there you can see in the back a lot of stuff. I can share you the screen with the formula what is gonna be a part of our new
show. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah,
and screen share. Boop.
Cool. So this is like alt. Okay. Yeah, you can see him.
Mm-hmm.
So we had like a study for the Formula One. We had a project similar where we did the visualizations only for the formula, but like we kind of went further and we have like this, something like this. It looks great, and like Unreal is a great piece of thing. I'm not sure how the frame rate is like.
Yeah, it's not amazing, but we definitely get the sense of what's going on.
Yeah, in any case, and we have like we do our quiz, so we know the just a sec, it's lagging right now. This is the 5.3 version. I'm gonna show you like we had some issues with Lumen. I'm not sure if it's displayed right now. Maybe I'm gonna disappear at the moment.
Sure.
Yeah, sharing. Yeah. So notice the look of the water in the back when I like hide the window.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
It was some like a Lumen bug that is not appearing in 5.4.
Right.
But in any case, yeah, we have a lot of, this was a study, like a rigging of the boat and the, I'm not sure if it's gonna noticeable. No way. Or it just stopped moving. They are like, the boats are supposed to move on the waves, and like they're transforming the motion to the rope, and like everything here is, all of this that you're seeing right now is gonna be a part. Like we have some shots that gonna be a part of the new showreel. I'm gonna share that with you as soon as we get it done, and I'll probably share with you the XR corridor that we did that I mentioned.
Awesome, yeah, it's beautiful work. Really well done.
It was like super tight deadline, and with the events, it's really chaotic because you don't have like, you can't prolong the deadline, and you can have more time because the event is done and they don't care. Like,
yeah,
you didn't manage to finish it on time.
Yeah, yeah. There's no such thing as being finished. There's just the time when you need to turn it in because there's a deadline.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we would add more things and like display it. But in any case, it was quite a cool project for us to deliver. I have a question for you, if you don't mind sharing. Gaussian splats. You said on Unreal Day that you basically managed to display them and have them like on standalone devices. Which plugin or what did you use to display to Gaussian splatting in standalone VR devices?
Right. So I have a couple examples that use the Luma AI plugin. They do not run as good at a frame rate as the work that's being done by our partners over at Arcturus Industries. So this would be Jeff Powers, for example. So this isn't something that I believe they've released to the public, but they were a big part of the work that my company's done on this Four Seasons project over in Austin, Texas. So they were able to take a data set of like a bunch of renders taken in Unreal Engine and then do a very optimized Gaussian splat of that runs standalone Quest 3. Also, as long as we're on the topic, Matt Mizankis, who I knew from a company called 60 AI, he just wrote a really interesting Medium article today that I'll put in the show notes about his company, Deja Vu. So most of the Gaussian splatting that we were showing was actually from our friends over at Arcturus Industries. This is Jeff Powers, not to be confused with the Arcturus that does like VolCap and things like that with Microsoft and other methods. Arcturus Industries is based over in Seattle, and they've got some really cool computer vision work, including novel ways of compressing and optimizing Gaussian spotting. So that's what we are showing. And as long as we're talking about that, it's as good a time as any to mention that Matt Nunzinkis, who I've known since 60 AI, which was, I believe, acquired by Google, he's been kind of in stealth mode doing a thing with A16Z speedrun for his new company called Deja Vu, which seems to be building on some of the work from Google's Surat as well as Lightfields to have super optimized kind of volumes of very high complexity data sets that you can render on mobile devices, including Quest. So I'm going to be chatting with Matt soon and hope to check out a demo. In the Medium article he wrote, which I'll post into the show notes today, he mentions that they have this like huge data set from the movie Dune. So it's a virtual data set and it won't even load up in Unreal Engine, but they're able to actually render this even in a browser with WebXR. Don't even need to have a native app. Very curious about that technology. But because we're running out of time, let's hop over very briefly to AWE Vienna. So we were both together in Belgrade, had a wonderful time there at Unreal Day. I went over to Berlin. I imagine you went home. And then from Berlin, I went over to Vienna. And then we both saw each other again like a week later. Had you been to AWE before? And what did you think of it?
I haven't been in like AWE before, but I like a friend of mine was a year before. He was kind of, he thinks that like for him, he's in gaming, in VR. He, the in Rotterdam, the VR week. He thinks it's like a better event, but like what we both agreed that in the US it's a different concept, and that the currently the US version of the AWE is like a better version than the European version. But like I think the AWE was great. I met a lot of VR developer companies from Austria, from the nearby region. Like I'm still connecting on them with LinkedIn and like chatting, and we're gonna have some like talks and like probably some cooperation. We need people like working with us on future projects and vice versa, whatever. But in any case, AWE was I saw the snaps. It's okay, but like I think the snaptical,
call them snapticals.
Snapticals, yeah. It would mean like you know what it is. It's not a snap is something different, yeah. So in any case, yeah, I tried different headsets. What you and me together tried out was like the mind reading experience. It's something that made me think like about like hyper reality and adding a more immersive like effect to VR applications. In any case, that's something to like to explore in the future and like try working on that. In any case, it was fun for me connecting, like networking. It was great seeing you again there, because I think you are a great networking person, and I'm like really glad how much energy you had in Belgrade, because I can imagine like 100 people came out to like talk with you and to try out the Apple Vision Pro and whatnot. And like even towards the end of the day, you were like that you had a lot of coffee that day.
Pure adrenaline, just riding on fumes. I got so little sleep up until Vienna. Like the plane ride from Berlin to Vienna, which isn't a super huge plane ride, that was probably the best period of sleep I'd gotten in the whole week before. So I'm glad to hear you say that I came out as like energetic and enthusiastic and all that, because the whole thing is just a complete blur to me now.
No, you were great, and we like I didn't want to like to be too pushy because we just met, but like I had too much questions and a lot of my colleagues were talking with you and stuff, and you were like just not giving up. You were like,
yeah. I think you had just the right amount of like politeness and perseverance, and like you really wanted to show me, you know, some of the demos on your phone, and I'm glad you did, because that's of course why I wanted to get you on the podcast, not just because we were also I think the only two people in the world who were at both Unreal Day and AWE Vienna, but really incredible to see the work that you and your studio have been up to. And it's been awesome to have you on here. The other thing I was going to mention about AWE as well was, did you go to bowling, by the way?
No, I did not, because to be honest, I was kind of when the first day was finished, I was too tired, and like kind of my son and my wife were in Vienna at the same time, and I chose to spend like an evening there and not to embarrass myself with bowling. I did not bowling for, but just kidding. And I kind of got a hotel room in a wrong part of the city. In a way, for me, it would be Vienna is a perfect city for like traveling by metro. It has really good like connection. You can move all around, but it was like a half an hour, maybe even more, to get to the point where the bowling is and to get back to the apartment where I was. So it was like, okay, I'm going to go there, go back. And I thought that if I go that evening, that the next day I'm going to skip. So I just came back the other day of AWE. In any case, I plan to go to Rotterdam in mm-hmm. December for the... It's now called different. It's not VR.
Yeah, it used to be called VR Days. I think now it's... Come on.
Immersive Tech Week.
Yeah. Immersive Tech Week, that's right. Yep.
Cool. In any case, yeah.
I'll look forward to hearing your thoughts on that. The only thing I was going to say about Vienna and the bowling was I thought it was actually a really fun kind of after party sort of way for everyone to connect. And I made some really good friends over there, not through any of us being good at bowling, but it was just a nice relaxed atmosphere for us all to hang out. And the food was quite good. I was very impressed by all the food I consumed across Belgrade, Berlin, and Vienna. I feel like food in general is just higher quality over in Europe compared to America, unfortunately. So I really enjoyed all the different treats to consume.
My idea is to come, like, probably, I didn't try the American food, like, I wasn't in the US, but I will probably come to next year GDC, it's in March. Yeah. So if you are there, you will probably be, like, let's try some American food.
Oh, let's do it. Yeah. Did you get any of the snacks I was handing out, by the way?
No, I did not.
I had a bunch of snacks for all my travels in Europe of just like various weird American things, like flavors of Oreos, pumpkin spice stuff, and weird treats that, as far as I knew, wouldn't be found over in Europe. And I had a lot of fun just giving those out to people and getting their reactions. You know, sauces, barbecue sauce, maple syrup, hot sauce, tons of stuff. Anyway, well, I'll definitely be sure to make sure you try the right things over at GBC. Before I let you go, two final things. Any shout outs you'd like to give to people who have inspired you in the past or present? And then let's make sure people know how to find you if they'd like to reach out and say hi.
Okay, so a biggest shout out to Vladimir Mastilovic. He's the guy who put the Serbia on the map, like at least at Epic Games. Single-handed. Yeah, that's nicely put. In any case, yeah, as well as people to like at Serbian Game Association for creating this like fantastic event of at Unreal Day. I kind of got like so much networking at Unreal Day in Belgrade instead of Vienna. And Vienna is new to me, so in a way, like all the people at SGA, like a big shout out, and they should create more events like Unreal Day in the future.
Make them longer,
and make them longer as well. For me, there you can contact me. My name is Georgi. Georgi, you can call Georgi because the C in the end is Georgi, like Jokic, Nikola Jokic. You can say that he's Jokic, but like it doesn't have the ring to it. In any case, Pixels to Pixels, we're like a XR3 animation development agency. We showed some of our works. We will probably have a new website and a new showreel real soon, so you can like see more of our projects and more of this fun stuff that we create. I think like I set it up for like connecting.
Yeah, what a wonderful chat. And we'll put as many of these links as we can in the show notes. So look out for those. And finally, the thing that I've been trying to do more and more, we'll see if we can pull it off today, is I want to see if to end the show, we can do a high five. Ready? Keith, you have to be out of breath. How we need to be tilted. I'll hold still. There we go. Yeah, but now we just act a little bit.
There we go. The problem is the it's not real time.
Excellent. Yeah. Okay, cool. And we'll play that back faster and it'll look perfect. Awesome. Thank you, Jorge. What a pleasure. Talk more soon. See you at the next big event.
See you. Bye.